Chapter 13 Land Under Wave. The Queen walked over the turf towards Tiffany. Where she'd trodden, frost gleamed for a moment. The little part of Tiffany that was still thinking thought, "That grass will be dead in the morning. She's killing my turf."
"The whole of life is but a dream when you come to think of it," said the Queen in the same infuriatingly calm, pleasant voice. She sat down on the fallen stones. "You humans are such dreamers. You dream that you're clever. You dream that you're important. You dream that you're special. You know, you're almost better than drones. You're certainly more imaginative, I have to thank you."
"What for?" said Tiffany, looking at her boots. Terror clamped her body in red-hot wires. There wasn't anywhere to run to.
"I never realized how wonderful your world is," said the Queen. "I mean, the drones, well, they're not much more than a kind of walking sponge, really. Their world is ancient. It's nearly dead. They're not really creative any more. With a little help from me, your people could be a lot better. Because, you see, you dream all the time. You especially dream all the time. Your picture of the world is a landscape with you in the middle of it, isn't it? Wonderful. Look at you, in that rather horrible dress and those clumpy boots. You dreamed you could invade my world with a frying pan. You had this dream about brave girl rescuing little brother. You thought you were the heroine of a story. And then you left him behind. You know, I think being hit by a billion tons of seawater must be like having a mountain of iron drop on your head, don't you?" Tiffany couldn't think. Her head was full of hot, pink fog. It hadn't worked. Her third thoughts were somewhere in the fog, trying to make themselves heard. "Got Roland out," she muttered, still staring at her boots. "But he's not yours," said the Queen. "He is, let us face it, a rather stupid boy, with a big red face and brains made of pork, just like his father. You left your little brother behind with a bunch of little thieves, and you rescued a spoiled little fool." "There was no time," shrieked the third thoughts. "You wouldn't have got to him and got back to the lighthouse. You nearly didn't get away as it was. You got Roland out. That was the logical thing to do. You don't have to be guilty about it. What's better, to try to save your brother and be brave, courageous, stupid, and dead? Or save the boy and be brave, courageous, sensible, and alive?" But something kept saying that stupid and dead would have been more right. Something kept saying, "Would you say to Mum that you could see there wasn't time to rescue your brother, so you rescued someone else instead? Would she be pleased that you'd worked that out? Being right doesn't always work." "It's the Queen," yelled the third thoughts. "It's her voice. It's like hypnotism. You've got to stop listening." "I expect it's not your fault you're so cold and heartless," said the Queen. "It's probably all to do with your parents. They probably never gave you enough time. And having Wentworth was a very cruel thing to do. They really should have been more careful. And they let you read too many words. It can't be good for a young brain, knowing words like paradigm and eschatological. It leads to behaviour, such as using your own brother as monster bait."
The Queen sighed.
"Sadly, that kind of thing happens all the time. I think you should be proud of not being worse than just deeply introverted and socially maladjusted."
She walked around Tiffany.
"It's so sad," she continued. "You dream that you are strong, sensible, logical, the kind of person who always has a bit of string. But that's just your excuse for not being really properly human. You're just a brain, no heart at all. You didn't even cry when Granny Aching died. You think too much, and now your precious thinking has let you down. Well, I think it's best if I just kill you, don't you?"
"Find a stone," the third thought screamed.
"Hit her!"
Tiffany was aware of other figures in the gloom. There were some of the people from the summer pictures, but there were also drones and the headless horseman and the bumblebee women. Around her, frost crept over the ground.
"I think we'll like it here," said the Queen.
Tiffany felt the cold creeping up her legs. Her third thoughts, hoarse with effort, shouted, "Do something!" She should have been better organised, she thought dully. She shouldn't have relied on dreams. Or perhaps I should have been a real human being, more feeling. But I couldn't help not crying. It just wouldn't come. And how can I stop thinking, and thinking about thinking, and even thinking about thinking about thinking? She saw the smile in the Queen's eyes and thought, which one of all those people doing all that thinking is me? Is there really any me at all? Clouds poured across the sky like a stain. They covered the stars. They were the inky clouds from the frozen world, the clouds of nightmare. It began to rain, rain with ice in it. It hit the turf like bullets, turning it into chalky mud. The wind howled like a pack of grimhounds. Tiffany managed to take a step forward. The mud sucked at her boots.
"A bit of spirit at last," said the Queen, stepping back.
Tiffany tried another step, but things were not working any more. She was too cold and too tired. She could feel herself disappearing, getting lost.
"So sad to end like this," said the Queen.
Tiffany fell forward into the freezing mud. The rain grew harder, stinging like needles, hammering on her head and running like icy tears down her cheeks. It struck so hard that it left her breathless. She felt the cold drawing all the heat out of her, and that was the only sensation left apart from a musical note. It sounded like the smell of snow or the sparkle of frost. It was high and thin and drawn out. She couldn't feel the ground under her, and there was nothing to see, not even the stars. The clouds had covered everything. She was so cold she couldn't feel the cold anymore, or her fingers. A thought managed to trickle through her freezing mind. Is there any me at all? Or do my thoughts just dream of me? The blackness grew deeper. Night was never as black as this, and winter never as cold. It was colder than the deep winters when the snow came down and Granny Aching would plod from snowdrift to snowdrift, looking for warm bodies. The sheep could survive the snow if the shepherd had some wits, Granny used to say. The snow kept the cold away, the sheep surviving in warm hollows under roofs of snow, while a bitter wind blew harmlessly over them. But this was as cold as those days when even the snow couldn't fall, and the wind was pure cold itself, blowing ice crystals across the turf. Those were the killer days in early spring, when the lambing had begun and winter came howling down one more time. There was darkness everywhere, bitter and starless. There was a speck of light a long way off. One star, low down, moving. It got bigger in the stormy night. It zigzagged as it came. Silence covered Tiffany and drew her into itself. The silence smelled of sheep and turpentine and tobacco. And then came movement, as if she was falling through the ground very fast, and gentle warmth, and just for a moment the sound of waves, and her own voice inside her head. This land is in my bones, land under wave. Whiteness. It tumbled through the warm, heavy darkness around her, something like snow but as fine as dust. It piled up somewhere below her because she could see a faint whiteness. A creature, like an ice cream cone with lots of tentacles, shot past her and jetted away. I'm underwater, thought Tiffany. I remember. This is the million-year rain under the sea. This is the new land being born underneath an ocean. It's not a dream. It's a memory. The land under wave. Millions and millions of tiny shells. This land was alive. All the time there was the warm, comforting smell of the shepherding hut and the feeling of being held in invisible hands. The whiteness below her rose up and over her head, but it didn't seem uncomfortable. It was like being in a mist. Now I'm inside the chalk, like a flint, like a caulkin. She wasn't sure how long she spent in the warm, deep water, or if indeed any time really had passed, or if the millions of years went past in a second, but she felt movement again and a sense of rising. More memories poured into her mind. There's always been someone watching the borders. They didn't decide to. It was decided for them. Someone has to care. Sometimes they have to fight. Someone has to speak for that which has no voice. She opened her eyes. She was still lying in the mud, and the Queen was laughing at her. And overhead, the storm still raged. But she felt warm. In fact, she felt hot. Red hot with anger. Anger at the bruised turf. Anger at her own stupidity. Anger at this beautiful creature whose only talent was control. This creature was trying to take her world. All witches are selfish, the Queen had said. But Tiffany's third thought said, then turn selfishness into a weapon. Make all things yours. Make other lives and dreams and hopes yours. Protect them. Save them. Bring them into the sheepfold. Walk the gale for them. Keep away the wolf. My dreams, my brother, my family, my land, my world. How dare you try to take these things, because they are mine. I have a duty. The anger overflowed. She stood up, clenched her fists, and screamed at the storm, putting into the scream all the rage that was inside her. Lightning struck the ground on either side of her. It did so twice, and it stayed there, crackling, and two dogs formed. Steam rose from their coats, and blue light sparked from their ears as they shook themselves. They looked attentively at Tiffany. The Queen gasped and vanished. "Come by, Lightning!" shouted Tiffany. "Away to me, Thunder!" And she remembered the time when she'd run across the downs, falling over, shouting all the wrong things, while the two dogs had done exactly what needed to be done. Two streaks of black and white sped away across the turf and up towards the clouds. They herded the storm. Clouds panicked and scattered, but always there was a comet streaking across the sky, and they were turned. Monstrous shapes writhed and screamed in the boiling sky, but thunder and lightning had worked many flocks. There was an occasional snap of lightning spark's teeth and a wail. Tiffany stared upwards, rain pouring off her face, and shouted commands that no dog could possibly have heard. Jostling and rumbling and screaming, the storm rolled off the hills and away towards the mountains, where there were deep canyons that could pen it. Out of breath, glowing with triumph, Tiffany watched until the dogs came back and settled once again on the turf. And then she remembered something else. It didn't matter what order she gave those dogs. They were not her dogs. They were working dogs. Thunder and Lightning didn't take orders from a little girl. And the dogs weren't looking at her. They were looking just behind her. She'd have turned if someone had told her a horrible monster was behind her. She'd have turned if they'd said it had 1,000 teeth. She didn't want to turn round now. Forcing herself was the hardest thing she'd ever done. She was not afraid of what she might see. She was terribly, mortally frightened, afraid to the centre of her bones of what she might not see. She shut her eyes while her cowardly boots shuffled her round, and then, after a deep breath, she opened them again. There was a gust of jolly sailor tobacco and sheep and turpentine. Sparkling in the dark, light glittering off the white shepherdess dress and every blue ribbon and silver buckle of it, was Granny Aching, smiling hugely, glowing with pride. In one hand she held the huge ornamental crook hung with blue bows. She pirouetted slowly, and Tiffany saw that while she was a brilliant glowing shepherdess from hat to hem, she still had her huge old boots on. Granny Aching took her pipe out of her mouth and gave Tiffany the little nod that was, from her, a round of applause. And then she wasn't. Real starlit darkness covered the turf, and the nighttime sounds filled the air. Tiffany didn't know if what had just happened was a dream, or had happened somewhere that wasn't quite here, or had only happened in her head. It didn't matter. It had happened. And now... "But I'm still here," said the Queen, stepping in front of her.
Perhaps it was all a dream. Perhaps you have got a little mad because you are, after all, a very strange child. Perhaps you had help. How good are you? Do you think that you can face me alone? I can make you think whatever I please. Crivens! Oh, no, not them, said the Queen, throwing up her hands. It wasn't just the Nac-Mac-Feagles, but also Wentworth, a strong smell of seaweed, a lot of water and a dead shark. They all appeared in mid-air and landed in a heap between Tiffany and the Queen. But a Pictsy was always ready for a fight, and they bounced, rolled, and came up, drawing their swords and shaking seawater out of their hair. "Oh, 'tis you, is it?" said Rob Anybody, glaring up at the Queen. "Face to face wi' ye at last, ye blousty old kalyak that ye are. Ye canna come here, understand? Be off wi' ye! Are ye going to go quietly?" The Queen stamped heavily on him. When she took her foot away, only the top of his head was visible above the turf. "Well, are ye?" he said, pulling himself out as if nothing had happened. "I don't want to have to lose my temper with you. And it's no good sending your pets against us, cos you ken we can take 'em to the cleaners." He turned to Tiffany, who hadn't moved. "You can just leave this to us, Kilda. Us and the Queen, we go way back." The Queen snapped her fingers. "Always leaping into things you don't understand," she hissed. "Well, can you face these?" Every Nac-Mac-Feagle's sword suddenly glowed blue. Back in the crowd of eerily lit Pictsies, a voice that sounded very much like that of Daft Woolley said, "Ach, we're in real trouble noo." Three figures had appeared in the air a little way away. The middle one, Tiffany saw, had a long red gown, a strange long wig and black tights with buckles on his shoes. The others were just ordinary men, it seemed, in ordinary grey suits. "Oh, you're a hard woman, Queen," said William the Gonagall, "to set lawyers on to us." "See the one on the left there," whimpered a Pictsy. "See, he's got a briefcase. It's a briefcase. Oh, whaley, whaley, a briefcase, whaley!" Reluctantly, a step at a time, pressing together in terror, the Nac-Mac-Feagles began to back away. "Oh, whaley, whaley, he's snapping the clasps," groaned Daft Woolley. "Oh, whaley, 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 'tis the sound of doom when a lawyer does that." "Mr. Rob Anybody, Feagle, and sundry others," said one of the figures in a voice of dread. "There's nobody here of that name," shouted Rob Anybody. "We didn't know anything. We have heard a list of criminal and civil charges, totalling 19,763 separate offences." "We wasn't there," yelled Rob Anybody desperately. "Isn't that right, lads?" "Including more than 2,000 cases of making an affray, causing a public nuisance, being found drunk, being found very drunk, using offensive language, taking into account 97 counts of using language that was probably offensive if anyone else could understand it, committing a breach of the peace, malicious lingering." "It's mistaken identity," shouted Rob Anybody. "It's nooer our fault. We was only standing there and someone else did it and ran away." "Grand theft, petty theft, burglary, housebreaking, loitering with intent to commit a felony." "We was misunderstood when we was bairns," yelled Rob Anybody. "You're only picking on us cos we're blue. We always get blamed for everything. The police hate us. We wasn't even in the country." But to groans from the cowering Pictsies, one of the lawyers produced a big roll of paper from his briefcase. He cleared his throat and read out, "Angus Big. Angus Noah's Big as Big Angus. Angus Wee. Archie Big. Archie One-Eyed, Archie Wee Mad." "They've got our names," sobbed Daft Woolley. "They've got our names. It's the prison who's for us." "Objection. I move for a writ of habeas corpus," said a small voice, "and enter a plea of visne faciem capite repletam without prejudice." There was absolute silence for a moment. Rob Anybody turned to look at the frightened Nac-Mac-Feagles and said, "Okay, okay, which of you said that?" The toad crawled out of the crowd and sighed. "It suddenly all came back to me," it said. I remember what I was now. The legal language brought it all back. I'm a toad now, but, it swallowed, once I was a lawyer. And this, people, is illegal. These charges are a complete tissue of lies based on hearsay evidence. It raised yellow eyes towards the Queen's lawyers. I further move that the case is adjourned sine die on the basis of potestne mater tua suere amice.
The lawyers had pulled large books out of nowhere and were thumbing through them hastily.
We're not familiar with counsel's terminology, said one of them.
Hey there, sweating, said Rob Anybody. You mean we can have lawyers on our side as well?
Yes, of course, said the toad. You can have defence lawyers.
Defence? Said Rob Anybody. Are you telling me we could have got a wowie at cause of tissue lies?
Certainly, said the toad. And with all the treasure you've stolen, you can pay enough to be very innocent indeed. My fee will be...
It gulped as a dozen glowing swords were swung towards him.
I just remembered why that fairy godmother turned me into a toad, it said. So, in the circumstances, I'll take this case pro bono publico.
The swords didn't move.
That means for free, it added.
All right, we like the sound of that, said Rob Anybody
to the sound of swords being sheathed.
How come you're a lawyer and a toad?
Oh, well, it was just a bit of an argument, said the toad. A fairy godmother gave my client three wishes, the usual health, wealth, and happiness package. And when my client woke up one wet morning and didn't feel particularly happy, she got me to bring an action for breach of contract. It was a definite first in the history of fairy godmothering. Unfortunately, as it turned out, so was turning the client into a small hand mirror and her lawyer, as you see before you, into a toad. I think the worst part was when the judge applauded. That was hurtful, in my opinion.
But you can still remember all that legal stuff. Good, said Rob Anybody.
He glared at the other lawyers.
Hey, you scunners! We got a cheap lawyer, and we're no afraid to use him with prejudice.
The other lawyers were pulling more and more paperwork out of the air now. They looked worried, and a little frightened. Rob Anybody's eyes gleamed as he watched them.
What does all that visne faciem stuff mean, my learned friend? He said.
Visne faciem capite repletam, said the toad.
It was the best I could do in a hurry, but it means approximately, he gave a little cough, would you like a face which is full of head?
And to think we didn't know legal talking was that simple, said Rob Anybody.
We could all be lawyers, lads, if we knew the fancy words. Let's get them.
The Knack Mac Feagle could change mood in a moment, especially at the sound of a battle cry. They raised their swords in the air.
1,200 angry men, they shouted. No more courtroom drama. We have the law on our side. The law's made to take care of rascals.
No,
said the Queen and waved her hand. Lawyers and Pixies faded away. There was just her and Tiffany facing one another on the turf at the dawn, the wind hissing around the stones.
What have you done with them? Tiffany shouted.
Oh, they're around somewhere, said the Queen airily. It's all dreams anyway.
And dreams within dreams. You can't rely on anything, little girl.
Nothing is real. Nothing lasts. Everything goes. All you can do is learn to dream, and it's too late for that. And I have had longer to learn.
Tiffany wasn't sure which of her thoughts was operating now. She was tired. She felt as though she was watching herself from above and a little behind. She saw herself set her boots firmly on the turf, and then, like someone rising from the clouds of a sleep, she felt the deep time below her. She sensed the breath of the downs and the distant roar of ancient seas trapped in millions of tiny shells. She thought of Granny Aching under the turf, becoming part of the chalk again, part of the land under wave. She felt as if huge wheels of time and stars were turning slowly around her. She opened her eyes and then, somewhere inside, opened her eyes again. she heard the grass growing, and the sound of worms below the turf. She could feel the thousands of little lives around her, smell all the scents on the breeze, and see all the shades of the night. The wheels of stars and years, of space and time, locked into place. She knew exactly where she was, and who she was, and what she was. She swung a hand. The Queen tried to stop her, but she might as well have tried to stop a wheel of years. Tiffany's hand caught her face and knocked her off her feet. "I never cried for Granny, because there was no need to," she said. "She has never left me." She leaned down, and centuries bent with her. "The secret is not to dream," she whispered. "The secret is to wake up. Waking up is harder. I have woken up, and I am real. I know where I come from, and I know where I'm going. You cannot fool me any more, or touch me, or anything that is mine." "I'll never be like this again," she thought, as she saw the terror in the Queen's face. "I'll never again feel as tall as the sky, and as old as the hills, and as strong as the sea. I've been given something for a while, and the price of it is that I have to give it back. And the reward is giving it back, too. No human could live like this. You could spend a day looking at a flower to see how wonderful it is, and that wouldn't get the milking done. No wonder we dream our way through our lives. To be awake and see it all as it really is, no one could stand that for long." She took a deep breath and picked the Queen up. She was aware of things happening, of dreams roaring around her, but they didn't affect her. She was real, and she was awake, more awake than she'd ever been. She had to concentrate, even to think against the storm of sensations pouring into her mind. The Queen was as light as a baby and changed shape madly in Tiffany's arms, into monsters and mixed-up beasts, things with claws and tentacles. But at last she was small and grey, like a monkey, with a large head and big eyes, and a little downy chest that went up and down as she panted. She reached the stones. The arch still stood. It was never down, Tiffany thought. She had no strength, no magic, just one trick. The worst one. "Stay away from here," said Tiffany, stepping through the stone doorway. "Never come back. Never touch what is mine." And then, because the thing was so weak and baby-like, she added, "But I hope there's someone who'll cry for you. I hope the king comes back."
"You pity me," growled the thing that had been the queen.
"Yes, a bit," said Tiffany. "Like Miss Robinson," she thought. She put the creature down. It scampered across the snow, turned, and became the beautiful queen again.
"You won't win," the queen said. "There's always a way in. People dream."
"Sometimes we waken," said Tiffany. "Don't come back, or there will be a reckoning." She concentrated, and now the stones framed nothing more or less than the country beyond. "I shall still have to find a way of sealing that," said her third thoughts, or her 20th thoughts, perhaps. Her head was full of thoughts. She managed to walk a little way and then sat down, hugging her knees. "Imagine getting stuck like this," she thought. "You'd have to wear earplugs and nose plugs and a big black hood over your head, and still you'd see and hear too much." She closed her eyes and closed her eyes again. She felt it all draining away. It was like falling asleep, sliding from that strange wide awakeness into normal, everyday, well, being awake. It felt as if everything was blurred and muffled. "This is how we always feel," she thought. "We sleepwalk through our lives, because how could we live if we were always that awake?" Someone tapped her on the boot.